The Runaway Asteroid, Chapter 5, The Destruction of Z-25. Joe dashed from the room and sped down the hallway to the control center of the mining base. Each strike of a laser beam colored the interior of the building with a ruby red as attackers' targets were vaporized, and the flashes were coming with disturbing frequency. He hurled himself into the tiny office where a frantic young man sat at a console. "We're going to die," cried the young man. Joe looked through the large window and saw a warship hovering over the base. Its laser cannons were rapidly destroying the outlying parts of the mining base. There were no defensive weapons. Joe glanced at the radar screen and his hair stood up as he saw the screen showed nothing. To the surveillance system, the ships were invisible. The technician was babbling in abject, helpless fear, but Joe's pulse leaped when he realized that the frightened young man might be right. They could all be dead at any moment. The man fled the room. Joe looked out through the window again and saw the laser cannons had begun to destroy the ships. Through the horrifying, rapidly expanding concentric vapor shells, he saw the vigilant warrior crumple into a heap. The other ships were either completely destroyed or well on the way. "What is this? Who are they?" exclaimed Mark. He, Zip, and George had followed Joe to the control room and were watching the laser beam sweep the landing field. The ships were being indiscriminately reduced to molten slag. "Their laser beams are immensely powerful, and they're operating at full capacity," observed Zip grimly. Just then the lights went out, and every apparatus in the control center went dark. "They found and destroyed the power plant," whispered George, the tenseness evident in his voice. "But they're not touching the inhabited parts of the base." Suddenly Zip turned to their host. "George," he said urgently, "do any of your crew know that we are starmen?" I don't know. I didn't tell anybody, I think, but I didn't keep it a secret. Look, gather them all together and tell them not to say anything about us to these invaders. Our safety may depend on it, as well as any chance we all have of eventually escaping." All right," George stammered. Since the power was out, there was no way to make an announcement through the communication system, but the rest of the crew was assembling anyway. The refectory was not located far from the control center, and the men were coming together there, so the starmen and George went to join them. In a moment there were about a dozen men in the room. Some sat on benches, others stood. There was palpable fear in the room, as if they knew that sudden violent death was near. Zip took charge. "Men, listen to me. We're about to be taken captives. I don't think anything worse will happen to us, or it would have happened by now. My friends and I have come to visit Sabbath George. Just got here from Ceres and sure didn't expect this." George took over. He was showing more confidence now. Alone of the Z-25 crew, he had never shown fear, just shock. "We'll just wait right here, men, and see what's next. I don't know who these attackers are or what they want, but don't volunteer any information of any kind. You hear me? No information of any kind beyond the most basic." The men were silent and collapsed in on themselves. They were afraid, but the panic seemed to have diminished somewhat. Outside, the ship had landed, and about 20 space-suited men had emerged. With weapons in hand, they were approaching the dome. The leader gestured to several of them who spread out around the dome. The others remained at the main airlock and waited. Their feet were spread in an attitude of defiant power. "They want the airlock open, Mr. St. George," said the young man who'd fled from the control center. His voice was dry and squeaky. George said, "Can't do it. No controls. Those fools destroyed the power center. If they're coming in, you'll have to get your spacesuits on because the atmosphere's going to disappear. Make it quick before they blow the airlock by force." The men scattered. George and the starmen went to the airlock and looked at the invaders from the inside of the dome. George said to the starmen, "Of course there's a backup power system, but I don't feel a compelling need to make it any easier for these strangers." When the leader saw that there were people coming, he kicked the airlock savagely and aimed his weapon at the mechanism. As was customary, the helmets were lined up on a rack of shelves just inside the airlock. George put on his helmet and the starmen put on theirs. The rest of the mining crew began to show up with their suits on and found their helmets. When all were suited up and the intercoms were on, George told the mining crew to stand aside. Then he told the leader of the invaders that he could enter. The man fired a stupendously powerful beam at the airlock and melted it like ice in a furnace. In seconds, the air inside the dome whooshed out into the vacuum of space. "Get into the ship," growled the leader of the invaders. "No one is going to be hurt, but I'm not guaranteeing that that situation will last. I am not a patient man, and I don't like wasting time." "What about our belongings?" asked George. "You won't need them. Move to the ship now." The voice was even and quiet, but as hard as iron. Zip started the procession. He slumped down as if completely disheartened and walked like a prisoner. His eyes pointed to the ground. The others followed. Several invaders entered first and kept watch on the prisoners as they ascended the ladder into the staging area. When the door was sealed, the invaders removed their helmets. The miners followed suit. The leader took a quick inventory of the prisoners and then settled his gaze on George. "You are George St. George," he said in a tone that knew he was stating a fact. "My name is Lather. You and your men are now prisoners of Lurton Zimbardo. I am taking you to him. As long as I've got you, I don't care about anything or anyone else. Don't make any trouble, and I won't see any need to put anyone off the ship. It doesn't make any difference to me whether any of your men is in deep space or my guest room, but it might make a difference to you and them." Without turning his head, Luther addressed one of his crew. "Spelford, escort the prisoners to their quarters." Spelford lifted his weapon and nodded in the direction they were to go. The prisoners went under the guard of several armed men. They were taken to a room set up to accommodate up to 20 passengers. There were niches with beds in them and couches for use during acceleration. "Prepare for liftoff," ordered Spelford. The prisoners sat down and strapped themselves in. Spelford and his men left, locking the door behind them. In a moment, the warning signal for liftoff was given. The ship raised itself gently from the surface of the asteroid. The fierce glare of destructive laser strikes came through the quartz window for nearly a minute, and the prisoners knew that the living quarters of Z-25 were being systematically destroyed. "They're ram-squaddling the whole operation," said Sabbath George in a voice that sounded almost matter-of-fact. "Never had anything like this happen before. This is a first." When the glow ceased, the ships accelerated. The starmen and their companions felt themselves pressed into the chairs. The warship had been gone for over an hour, but the man in the shadow still did not move. He was on a neighboring chunk of floating iron, just a mile or two in diameter, with a very slow rotation. St. George's asteroid would vanish below his horizon in a few minutes. The man pulled his telescope up to his faceplate once again and scanned the area that had been the base on Z-25. There had been no movement of any kind since the ships had raided the site. He took a few more pictures for his files. The metal and quartz plating, all signs of human presence, had been completely destroyed, melted into the rock of the asteroid. The brilliant orange of superheated rock had quickly cooled in the near-absolute zero of airless space. "Guess it's okay to go now," he thought. "Those space buzzards are not detail men. Just grab and destroy without even looking around. Lucky for me." The man went over to a small asteroid cruiser built for speed and touring the asteroid belt. Stepping in, he sealed the airlock and pulled out a small recorder. He tuned in a complicated code and began to speak. "Steve Cliff reporting into Oritz Koenig on Mars base." Steve went on to give the date, time, and location and a brief but thorough report of what he had seen from the time the starmen landed on Z-25 to the time the pirates' five ships had disappeared. He added to the file the pictures he had taken. When he finished the recording, he put it in a small projectile with an automatic timer that would send the message in 3 hours. Then he lifted off the small asteroid and headed toward Ceres. A few minutes after liftoff, he fired the projectile. When it sent its message, Steve Cliff would be far away and no one could trace the message back to his ship. On top of that, the message was encrypted and designed to travel on the microwaves similar to those in the background of space. It was highly unlikely that this message would make anyone curious. After the message had been sent, the projectile would break down into its component parts, and the parts would scatter into the infinity of space. The ships had stopped accelerating, and the prisoners could talk easily. Mark looked over his shoulder. George had his arms around two of his men and was talking to them in a low voice. The rest of them were gathered around, paying close attention to what he was saying. Already the atmosphere was one of peace. No one seemed afraid now. Through the window beyond, a portion of the vast arm of the Milky Way spread out in its eternal beauty. The starmen were silently wondering the same things. How long would it be before they met Lurton Zimpardo? Would he recognize them? Why did he want St. George alive?